You're listening to the Cinemaphile Podcast with Andrew Shearer, brought to you by OnlineAthens.com.
Whoa, did you hear that?
Can that be the intro to our podcast? This meeting is being recorded.
You sound just like it. It's Dr. Zoom. She's here to let you know she can really shake them down. Well, Sam, welcome back to the Friday Five, man. It's good to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you, too. I mean, not going to do that voice the whole time, but it's just really funny.
My talking to you is being recorded. Oh, man. I used to do a pretty good movie phone back in the day, Mr. Movie.
Oh, I remember. Didn't you have it on your voicemail at one point in time?
I may have. I don't know. I don't want to get all loud in the house here in the evening, but yeah, I could do a little Mr. Movie phone. I recently rewatched Josie and the Pussycats and Spice World back to back.
Josie good combo.
I mean, they're both still good, but man, Josie's got some dated references in it, and Movie Phone was one.
Yeah, like, it was.
It's like, you know, this ain't going to go over now. It's old, you're going to judge who's old in the room by who laughs at Movie Phone. For those who may be listening that don't know Movie Phone, it was a service you could call and type in, follow the numbers and find the show times for the movie theater or movie that you wanted to see. This was like pre-Fandango type stuff. I don't know if you could buy tickets through the phone. Do you remember?
I don't think you could. It was really just about like getting to a movie theater at the right time for the movie and not having to have a newspaper.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. A newspaper. I went there.
Yeah. It's okay, man. Newspaper been very, very good to me.
Yep.
Trying to make it cool with that. Well, so for those who are not used to hearing the Friday Fives or maybe hearing this podcast for the first time, Sam and I have been friends for a few minutes. We go back to the 90s. Speaking of Spice World, I was friends with you before Spice World came out.
I know. And before Josie came out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely, man. So back then, we were movie geeks together working at Big Blue and Yellow. And we still like to get together and talk about the movies that we've seen. So what we do on the Friday Five is we think five movies that we want to talk about, and we do the thing for you, the consumer, for you, the listener. And this time we've seen almost all five movies. I think we only came up with one between us that we hadn't seen, right?
Yeah.
So how do you want to do it? You just want to go down the list of the new ones? You want to go like in order?
I was going to go order oldest to newest, but
okay. That sounds good to me, man. Well, go for it.
So my first one is Palm Springs with Andy Samberg and J.K. Simmons, Peter Gallagher, like really great cast. This movie was not on my radar. Funny enough, like my husband was like, "Hey, I put this movie, you know, thought you'd like to see this movie, so let's watch it." And I'm like, okay. And it was great.
Yeah. It's a Hulu original.
It is. And it's so funny. So for those of you that have been listening, you probably know that one of my favorite genres is like dark humor comedy films. And this is sort of like right up my alley. It's about a guy who basically, like Groundhog Day, is sort of stuck in the same day over and over and over and over again, and obviously does different things to try to have different outcomes of the day. And accidentally, this other person gets stuck in the same day with him.
Yeah, I'm saying spoilers are okay for this one. It's been out a long time.
Okay, good. And so, which is great for him because he kind of like digs this chick. But there's also someone else who accidentally is in the same day who wants to kill him. Yeah. Which, if you watch this film, the different death scenes are pretty interesting and hilarious. But yeah, so I mean, it's dark because obviously, you know, stuck in the same day, how do you get out? There are absolutely funny moments. Like just the first opening scene to me was just hilarious. The montage when she gets stuck in the same day and they're kind of like dating and they get to have like a different date each day, mm-hmm. Is wonderful too. I don't know. It's really great. J.K. Simmons' role, I don't know that I've ever seen him play even a character remotely close to this. It's such an interesting character. He's the one trying to kill Andy Samberg.
Yeah, I got to admit, man, I liked Samberg on Saturday Night Live, but have not been as much into his movie work and his, you know, post-SNL. I'm not watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I saw Hot Rod and I saw The Pop Star, and they didn't hit me the way they hit other people. But I think it was like the plot of this one just really, really did it for me. And what's crazy is there's been so many kind of movies since Groundhog Day with this plot. And I can think of the recent Twilight Zone episode, Try.
Yep.
That had that plot. And the movies, the Happy Death Day movies, I don't know if you're a fan, but I love those. They're like really, really good. Part two is almost like real genius. Like it's a lot of fun.
And, I haven't seen those.
Yeah, the lead is hilarious. This woman keeps getting murdered, and she's going through the same day and getting killed and coming back. And it's just, oh man, I think they're comedies. They're not really horror. They're comedies, even more so than Scream. But they teeter the line of satire. They have solid performances and stories, but. We're talking about Palm Springs. I did love J.K. Simmons' character. That's not a character you usually see in stories like this. So I thought it was really cool that they invented him for that. And he does steal the movie once you find out who he really is and stuff. But
yeah.
I love the female lead. Her name is Kristen Milioti, and I've never seen her in anything. And to me, it was just... I don't know. It was just a perfect mix of stuff. We laughed a lot. Like my wife and I have been watching, a movie a day once we're done with our work. And man, this was, I don't know what it was. I think they just finally got me. I think it was a good script and a good cast.
Yes. And I think it was nice. Like they didn't try to make it too long or too much to think about. It's a nice short little 90-minute movie too. It's not like, you know, 2.5 hours of repeating the same day. I loved it. It was great. It was a nice, really, really nice kind of break from all the seriousness going on. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was I remember you telling me like, have you seen it? You were like, you knew I would love it. And you were right.
Cool.
All right. What's next on the list, man? Timeline.
My next one is the one you haven't seen, which is An American Pickle.
Okay, well, I'll pick one I'll just pick one after this, and then we'll do the rest.
All right. So, American Pickle is a comedy with Seth Rogen, where he plays two characters. He plays an old-timey, let's just call him old-timey pickle plant worker who falls in the pickle brine and stays there for 100 years and then is rejuvenated, reanimated, whatever word you want to use.
Yeah.
In present day. And so then he finds his only living relative, which is his grandson. And so Seth Rogen plays both the grandfather and the grandson. And I really liked this film a lot. I thought it was quite funny, but extremely topical with like the things going on in the world today. Like it addresses racism, sexism, like those type of things, because you would think a person from 100 years ago has very different points of view about, you know, what should be happening in the world and how things should be versus somebody in modern day, you know, a progressive person. And so it certainly touches on that, but it's kind of like really funny. So what happens is like, there's all good feels and ooh, grandpa finds grandson. Yay. And then grandson's trying to make his way in the world, like inventing this app for a phone. And you know, grandpa's like pushing him to do a good job and all this stuff, and then kind of makes the plan go sideways. And so grandson resents grandpa, and grandpa's like, I'm going to show you. And so it's like they're battling each other in some weird way. And it's just, it's really funny.
Wow. There's a lot really more to it than I realized. Wow.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It's not just about like some guy that comes back 100 years later and is like, whoa, look at the world. No, there's actually like a lot to the plot in the story. And so I don't want to give away too much, but like it has some really great funny moments and some moments where you're just like, what?
Yeah.
And like I said, it definitely takes on like a lot of political things going on in the world right now as well. Just like head on. It's like, bam, here you go. And so it's very, very, very funny. I mean, just, you really should watch it. It's great.
Yeah, no, I will. And I, you know, I think part of what it was is I had a saturation point with the Freaks and Geeks guys, Seth Rogen, James Franco, and Jason Siegel, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Although he hasn't been all over the place since that movie Sex Tape that he did. neither has Cameron Diaz either, I think. But yeah, I think that was the thing. I got tired of that whole group and that whole style of humor. But I have to admit, I did not do enough digging into American Pickle to know what it was.
Yeah, and I don't think the trailer does a good job of telling you what the story is. And I feel like it strays from like what the normal Freaks and Geeks cast kind of humor movies have been doing. So anyway, I leave it at that. It's good.
Okay. Well, I think there's a lot of them I could choose that I saw that I really liked on streaming this month. So we'll talk about Project Power. I am not the biggest like Netflix movie watcher, like the Netflix originals and stuff, you know, like that. A lot of times I'll have actions or comedies. But here lately, I'm feeling like the movies they're putting out are stuff I would have gone to see in the theater. What was that one? The Lovebirds was going to
be in the theater. So good. Yes.
It was so, so great. And, you know, I think it was a combination of I really like Jamie Foxx. Dominique Fishback is the girl that's in this movie. I'm not exactly sure how old she is, but I saw her in a movie called Night Comes On. There's a review on Online Athens for those of you who want to look it up. But she is his foil in the movie, because the concept is there's this drug and criminals are like taking it, and it like gives them superpowers just briefly, just for like a few minutes. So they're like pulling off all these robberies, and there's this whole like, you know, drug gang and stuff like that. And the beginning of the movie, he's chasing this guy through a house, and it's intense. I mean, the guy breaks open one of the little pills and he turns into like the Human Torch, basically. Well, it's crazy. It's like suddenly this cop has got to chase the Human Torch. And so do you like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, that guy?
Yes. Yeah,
he is also a police, but he has gotten kicked off the police force because he took some of the drug to catch someone. So he gave himself superpowers to catch this guy. And then you have Dominique Fishback's character is she's selling the drug on the streets, but she's like kind of like a bratty kid or a very young woman. And so they're a neat combination. But Jamie Foxx, he could be doing absolutely anything, like, or he could be doing nothing. Like, he's at that level. And right. I was just like, why would he make this? Because it's not quite a Will Smith project, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like almost there. Because, you know, Will Smith loves doing these sci-fi action movies. But Jamie Foxx, you know, not quite as often. And so I don't want to spoil things for people, because I knew a lot of people watched it right away that were interested in it. I will say this, though. It's so gory. Like, there's some really gory violence in it. Like, that I wasn't expecting. Like, people do blow up. I was like, whoa. Oh, no. Okay. You know, what we got to remember is we're not dealing with the ratings board here.
Right.
With Netflix and with Prime and with Hulu. And so it's like, you can, but you almost get the feeling like he didn't know that they were going to make it this gory because they all did it in post-production. So it's like, you sort of go like, am I the right age for this movie? Because it seems like more of the, you know, the video game player, like the violent game player might like this kind of thing. It would make a great game. Like it, you know, that plot sounds like, you know, run around and shoot him. But no, I thought it really, really great. And I'm curious to know how old the script is, because it almost seemed like a 2000s movie or something. You know, it didn't seem like a right now movie, but I liked it though. And I can't say enough about Dominique Fishback. She's just a really good actor. I'll watch her in absolutely anything. And she's probably been in something since Night Comes On. I just don't know. But no, it's got enough comedy. It's got enough action and blood, but mostly it's just a really cool concept. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt does not play the kind of role. His role doesn't figure in the way like a white guy's role would be. Like the reason why I want to know when this was written is because it could easily have been years ago made, and like white man is the lead, white woman or young white woman is the younger character, and then the black guy would be the cop. I could easily see it have been made that way, you know, just 5-10 years ago. But because it's not, the movie has this whole other thing going for it. And I was, by the ending, I was going like, wow, okay. So this might have seemed like just a concept sci-fi blow 'em up, you know, Netflix movie, but you start to really start to sink in what you've just seen. You know, this is not a typical setup in terms of the race of the actors playing these characters. So Project Power is pretty great.
And I like Jamie Foxx, and I really can't remember the last thing that I've seen him in, actually.
No?
No. Like, his last thing that I've maybe watched him in was Django, maybe?
Whoa.
Maybe I have missed a bunch of Jamie Foxx movies.
Clearly. No. I mean, you know, I don't have his any kind of notes or filmography in front of me, but yeah, no, I'm fairly certain that...
Done something since then.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was just Mercy, but I'm thinking about like action stuff, you know, because that was a drama. So I guess maybe he has been more doing drama lately. But this was it's good. I mean, if you like action movies and sci-fi action, this is it. This is good.
Well, next movie that I watched was Bill and Ted Face the Music. So this is where I tell you that I probably haven't seen the first two since they came out. So
you didn't rewatch like in excitement? You didn't rewatch?
Oh no, I did. We watched all three in a row.
Nice.
So it was a nice like little 5.5 hour movie-thon of all three Bill and Ted's. And the first two actually hold up fairly well. You know, there's a couple of things here or there where you're just like make you cringe slightly, but other than that, they're like pretty okay.
Like the homophobia.
Yes, thank you. That is exactly the big thing.
Yeah, there is homophobia used as comedy in both Bill and Ted. They are of their time.
Yes, that is very much the comedy of the era. But Bill and Ted Face the Music, I really was excited to kind of see where they were going to go with this. And it totally did not disappoint me at all. Because, what I think is funny about this movie is here's two middle-aged white men trying to figure out the song to save the universe that they still haven't written in, you know, 20, 30, however many years. And they still think it's sort of just all about them. And I don't want to give away too much because I feel like this hasn't been out long enough.
No, but, and it's in theaters and on demand the same day.
But clearly there are daughters involved and it's so good. I just, the script is great. They took it in a wonderful direction. They were super smart about it. And they just kept with kind of like the same style and feeling that the first two had. Like it didn't feel out of sorts at all.
Yeah.
when I watched all three back to back, it didn't feel like, it didn't feel noticeably like we were skipping 20 plus years in terms of just like the tone and the pacing and the feeling of the movie and the characters.
Okay.
Which I enjoyed. I love that they were able to bring back most of the original casts. Obviously the princesses in the second movie were not the same ones from the first movie. And so the fact that they were not the same ones again, fine. I think the only thing that bothered me is that they certainly were way younger than the original princess's age would be now.
Yeah.
That was the one thing I was just was like, why
ain't that always the way? I mean, yeah. These dudes are like 50 or whatever.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. But I enjoyed it. It was fun.
Yeah. I also watched the other ones before I watched part three. I watched them the night before. And yeah, I'd forgotten or just didn't. It had been the first time since they were new. And I was like, oh, there's that word. And then on Bogus Journey, which was always my favorite because it was the weirder of the two, they like tripled down on it. And I was like, oh, ooh. So,
yep.
You know, homophobic slur. So I was like, all right, part three. All you got to do is not use this word and you're going to be my favorite of the Bill and Ted movies.
Totally.
And I actually, yeah, it is my favorite. I had a little bit of expectations because this is the director of Galaxy Quest, Dean Parasot. And you're going to be thinking Galaxy Quest is a cult classic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, all right, but they got the Bill and Ted writer, Ed Solomon, and somebody else. And I'm like, all right, but the Galaxy Quest writer was amazing. And I kind of want them to, you know, and I started to think, I was like, well, could they do one of the Galaxy Quest writers and one of the Bill and Ted? And they come like together, but it wasn't. And I would have been fine if it was Galaxy Quest Part 2 starring Bill and Ted. I mean, that would have been... Or I think in my notes I said Bill and Ted faces Wayne and Garth. Just go full out 90s, you know? But
yeah.
I thought... another reason why I liked it the most is the female characters had way more... Well, let's put it this way. There were female characters in this.
Yeah.
And I can't really say that about the other two.
No, not at all. I mean, like the second one, Pam Grier was like as close to, and Missy, the trope wife, like were the closest to female characters in the first two movies.
Yeah, they just didn't. Oh, and who was in the first one? Bernie Casey was their teacher.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, Bernie Casey. He, you know, Bernie Casey passed very recently, but man. Love Bernie Casey. And of course, everyone knows I love Pam Grier. And I'd forgotten she was in that is their manager in part two.
Yep.
But I don't know if, yeah, I don't know if I had any real expectations aside from that. I was like, I think parts one and two are PG. But two, I think probably is a more of a PG-13. This one's PG-13, but I cannot remember anything in it that would kind of push the, you know what I mean? Other than a kid, little kid probably wouldn't care about it. So let's just go ahead and make it PG-13, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't think of anything either.
But, I mean, think about it in terms of like band reunions when they get back together. You're always sort of like expecting them to be a little rough around the edges or, you know, something like that. This did not feel like a cash-in of any kind because really no one asked for this.
Nope, no. Well, and I love that, like, I sort of love all the different incarnations of Bill and Ted as they travel into the future to see themselves and just like all the different crazy versions of themselves that they interact with is just wonderful. And it feels like Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves just went in and were like, let's just have fun.
Yeah.
I'm here to have fun.
They had a great time. And, you know, they're both well established in the movie industry. They didn't need to do it.
Right.
You can tell it's just something that they loved and had wanted to do for a long time, waiting for the script to be there. And there it was. And yeah, I was happy with the story. Loved all those new special effects. You know, the old ones have a lot of early work there. But No, I loved it. Death was in there. I thought their daughters were great.
They were wonderful.
I really liked them. So yeah, no, it's the best Bill and Ted, and I'm actually ended up being happy they did it, because you know how I am. If you do a two, do a three. I'm always, you know, that's the classic way to do it. So
yeah, which means two movies that had part threes this year, significantly after their part two, which the other one was Bad Boys.
God, Bad Boys
have not disappointed.
No, I could go back to the episode where we talked about Bad Boys 3. Man, oh, yep. What a script that movie had. That was so great. I mean, as much as I love the other ones. Anyway, I'll just rehash my review of it. All right, so we had our other two are going to be movies that came out last weekend, right?
Yep.
Okay, so I guess we can just decide what kind of ending we want to go on.
I'm going to let you pick.
All right. I think we should do the Kaufman first and then do Mulan last.
On it. I'm thinking of ending things. Starring the two Jessies. When I saw the trailer and I was just like, oh, that's cute. It's two Jessies. Huh. Okay. So first of all, I like Charlie Kaufman films. My favorite is Schenectady, New York.
Mm-hmm.
I like Eternal Sunshine. Some of the other ones are fine. I don't connect with, I guess, as much as I do the other ones. This one did not disappoint me. It was really good. It's very strange. And it was very uncomfortable to watch at the same time. Like, I felt uncomfortable the whole time. I don't know how else to describe it. The story is about a woman who travels with her new boyfriend to meet his parents. And there is a large chunk of the movie that is just the two of them in the car dialogue getting to the parents' house. Then a large chunk of the movie at the parents' house. And then a large chunk of the movie after they leave the parents' house. So you can feel the different acts of the film for sure in this movie. But the performances by, God, everybody, Jesse Plemons, Jesse Buckley, who I absolutely adore and love everything that she's been in.
Did you see Wild Rose?
Yes. Oh, so good.
Wild Rose, great.
And then Toni Collette, David Thewlis, just everybody's so, so good. And the movies, like, it doesn't really follow a linear timeline, if that's what you're expecting at all. It jumps around. The characters' ages jump around. There is certainly, I don't want to give too much away. And well, I don't want to impose. And
let's just say, skip this, dude, if you don't want to hear spoilers.
There you go. Skip it if you don't want to hear spoilers. So it was really weird because going through this movie, I felt like it was having a certain direction. And, you know, I know that this isn't what the movie is technically about, but I also know that Kaufman movies are very much of like, he doesn't want to tell you what they're about because they're whatever you think they're about. Like, that's just how his films are. It's whatever you think it is. And I felt going in that we were watching a madman and his kind of collection of memories and interactions with people that he had possibly killed. That's actually what I thought, like, up until probably about after they leave the parents' house and get ice. Well, you know what? Even after the ice cream stop, it's just really just crazy. Like, that sort of was the feeling that I had felt. But then I realized as we get to like the closing scenes that that's not exactly what it's about. It's still his collection of kind of memories, inventions, his own personal history, because everybody remembers things, not necessarily exactly as they happen, but how the emotions and feelings of what happened leave their marks on them. And that's what we were watching a movie of. And so it just was so well done. Like, I don't know. It sat with me for a couple of days for sure.
Well, you know, I'm a big Twilight Zone fan. And yes. To me, it was like watching David Lynch do an episode of Twilight Zone.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
It, you know, it had a Twilight Zone kind of plot. It had, you know, that weird structure. It had that minimalist setting and the minimalist cast. I love Jesse Buckley. I love them sitting in the car. Did you think, what's the other guy's name? Jesse what? Plemons?
Jesse Plemons.
Did you see like Philip Seymour Hoffman in that role? Like if he'd still lived? Because I know Kaufman liked, you know, worked with him with us next year.
I can see it now that you mention it, but I also feel like if you ever watch Jesse Plemons in other films, he kind of just has that air about him.
The Philip Seymour Hoffman smart.
Yes. Yes.
I just kept thinking about that, but yeah, I'm a big fan of Kaufman as well. My favorite probably, because I'm a writer, would be adaptation. Mm-hmm. I really liked how this was basically his horror movie.
Yeah.
And so once I broke it down into genre and then put it into that, you know, that Twilight Zone form, it really was less complicated for me than it was, I think, for a lot of people. And I thought it was hilarious. Like, I laughed so much when I was watching it. The parts with Toni Collette, I think she just went bananas. I loved how big she got to play that thing. And because I feel like we were in a genre movie, that she could just do, you know, just go crazy. And I loved how surreal it was also. As far as what did I think was happening, we are doing spoilers with this one and people can just mute it or fast forward or not listen. But at a certain point, I was just like, I bet the girl does not exist.
Right.
And then I was just like, what is the connection with this janitor guy? You know? And then I think there was some kind of clue there, and I'm never the one to pick up a clue, so he must have been really putting it out there. At a certain point, I was just like, all right, well, he's the janitor, right? And none of this is really happening. It made me so happy. I don't think making sense is a thing that needs to happen in movies. In fact, I think making sense is overrated. I also don't feel the need to understand what I've watched either. I like it more when I can, like you said, interpret it for myself. And so in that regard, yeah, incredible, incredible movie.
I think it really pulls very deeply at emotions. Like, I'm with you. There were parts where I laughed out loud. Like, it was so funny. And then there were parts where I was near tears because there were pieces that were really heartbreaking to me.
There were.
I felt like Kaufman just had a way of like telling this amazing story and ideas, but also like evoking such like deep emotions from the viewer on both sides of the scale and in such an interesting way. So I really liked it. Yeah, it was good.
I think the one that got me that he made, of course, Eternal Sunshine when I first saw it. Malkovich, I just think is too absurd to be sad, but it does always surprise me how sad it is. Anomalisa, the one that was the stop motion animated one,
mm-hmm.
that I think is the one that gets me the most. That's that particular story. I love them all. So yeah, I'm glad you saw that and want to talk about it. It hit a lot of my friends. It hit them in a really big way. It just didn't with me. It just, I was like, you know, I'm happy. Anything that's like Twilight Zone makes me happy.
Yeah. And I feel like I'm also at a point too, where I just like Jesse Buckley so much that I would watch pretty much anything that she's been in.
Yeah. Wild Rose, everybody. Wild Rose.
There was the other one too, that we talked about a couple years ago. And I always, Beast with her.
Oh yeah. No, you recommended Beast to me. It was awesome.
Yeah. That one's so good too. So.
Are we ready for Mulan?
Yes, we're ready for Mulan.
Okay, now the first thing I want to say is that we were right about Mulan.
We totally were right about Mulan.
We were right about Bill and Ted. We did the last Friday Five. We did a game called Streaming or 2021, in the game streaming or 2021, Sam and I predicted which movies coming up for 2020 release would be moved to 2021 and which ones would go to streaming. And so, yeah, we were right about everything so far. And also Antebellum coming up this month, I was also right about.
Yeah.
We didn't think they were going to open theaters, but they did.
Yeah. Not where I am. Nothing's open.
We'll talk about that when we get to the end of the episode. I do want to bring something up, but
Mulan.
Let's talk about Mulan, man. Go for it.
So first of all, this is on Disney Plus. You have to pay $30. I am a little annoyed at all the people whining about $30, and I'm like, it's the cost of two movie tickets. And if you wouldn't spend that to go to the movies to see it, then you should just wait.
Yeah, or one ticket and one drink.
Right? Exactly. So this is one that I have been eagerly awaiting all year long. And when COVID hit and things shut down, like, this is one of the top five that I wanted to see this year.
It was about to come out, wasn't it?
Like, it was.
Really about to come out.
And I just was like, okay. Every time I saw this trailer in the movie theater, I teared up. And I just was like, I cannot wait to see this film. I was not disappointed at all. It was so good, like, start to end. It was just, like, so amazing. First of all, it's absolutely gorgeously shot. Beautiful, like, the landscape, the color usage. Obviously, her red outfit, but, like, just where it's colorful and where it's really dull in colors and the use of the phoenix and just, it's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. It reminded me a lot of Kundun, the Scorsese movie.
Yeah.
And just in how the color was used throughout the film. I just was like, oh my God, I'm having flashbacks, which I love Kundun. It's one of my favorite Scorsese movies ever.
Oh, totally.
Story, obviously, it's not, nobody breaks into song and dance like they do in the cartoon, but pretty much stays exactly to the original story. And it's just, I don't know, like, obviously, if you haven't seen the original Mulan now, too bad, spoilers about this one. But just how they introduce her character, how they kind of show her, you know, starting off really young and where she's learning all of this stuff, and then how she's like told, no, you have to hide away your special talents and be a woman because that's what you're supposed to do. That's how it's supposed to be. And then obviously, you know, to save her family, she sort of goes against that and joins the military. I don't know. I loved this story as a cartoon. It's always been one of my favorites, Disney films. I think the transition to the live action was great. I applauded that there wasn't a lot of, like, gory violence and blood. Like, I don't even know that I ever saw any blood even shed.
No.
I'm not sure why it's PG-13 instead of PG, other than
just the war
stuff.
She's
naked at one point. Yeah. But it's just an amazing film. And I cried during it. I laughed during it. But it just, like, I had such proud moments of this female heroine out there really just making her way. And it was good.
Yeah. Yeah. I am just now watching a lot of Disney because I have a kid. You know, I wasn't a Disney watcher before. So I had to see all this stuff basically for the first time. And while there were things I loved and that stood out for me about Mulan, to me, Moana was the best because Mulan still had the love interest, you know, it had that love story in there too. And I was just like, oh, you're veering away from the path, man. This is supposed to be like a feminist movie. I thought, you know, it could have easily been. And so now Disney is in the era of Mulan and Shuri from Black Panther and, like, Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. You know, these characters have no interest in a relationship really, and have no, the plot is not about Princess getting married or something, or at all, really, you know?
Right.
This is the movie, because everybody's like, oh, no, Mulan's the best. You're going to love it. And I, you know, I see why they say that. But to me, this is the movie that I wanted Mulan the original to be.
Totally.
Think about the ground that would have been broken. Yes. But I, you know, in addition to it being beautifully shot, beautifully acted, great suspense, well structured. I like what they did, how they, you know, completely eliminated some characters and how they switched around some characters, kept that essential story the same. I want to talk about some of the secondary roles, though, because I recognize, obviously, Donnie Yen. You know, he's a very recognizable voice and face. Mm-hmm. Jason Scott Lee, it didn't click to me that that was him as the villain until near the end where he got a lot of close-ups, you know? Mm-hmm. But Jet Li, I did not recognize at all. Did you?
You didn't. Yes, no. I totally did.
I did not recognize him. I hadn't seen him. He's been retired for a while. I didn't know what, you know, Jet Li 2019 or 20 looked like.
Yeah. No, I totally recognized him. It was really exciting.
Yeah, that blew my mind. So, you know, my only, if I had any complaint, it was this. And I love Christina Aguilera's music. I think she's an incredible singer. I do really like her music. We were just rewatching Adam's Family the other day, and Haunted Heart is such a great song. Mm-hmm. But why could they not have had, you know, some canto pop singer? Or, you know, why did they have to go with her for the ending of this? Why couldn't they? Because there's so much attention they pay to Chinese culture, even though the director, Nikki Caro, wasn't that I know of, and any sort of Asian descent, but it so promotes Chinese culture. It's such a big thing in the movie, and so much they got right and so much they paid attention to in terms of casting, but they get to the end song and, you know,
yep.
That just to me, like, if I had to do a star system, I'm knocking one off for that. That's not nothing against the music. It was beautiful. I just like, yeah. Why couldn't they, you know, because over the summer I watched this documentary about Denise Ho. This is a canto pop singer. And, and that reminds me, because of the whole thing about Anita Mui in that movie. Were you a fan of Wing Chun, the martial arts movie, the Wu Ping movie that starred Michelle Yeoh from the 90s, like mid-90s?
Not really.
Okay, because I loved Wing Chun, and the whole story about that was, Yun Wing Chun was supposed to have been a man, right? Mm-hmm. He was like, you know, pretending to be a male or whatever. And so the dudes kept attacking and she kept whooping them, you know. With this, I was just like, there was a scene where I think it was in the tea room scene where she was catching things with her feet. It was right out of Wing Chun. Like, someone had to have been paying tribute to Wing Chun. Mm-hmm. But I, yeah, no, I'm, I loved it. You know, I had no problem paying that 30. Absolutely not. Cause now I have it. Like, it's part of my Disney Plus. I've already watched it again.
it's very good.
No, I still spent at least that. Yeah. At the movies, buying tickets for three for a matinee. But speaking of movies, man, let's do it. So you have no theaters open out there.
No, we do not. Not a single one. Which, I mean, it makes me a little bummed. I don't know that I would go if they're open, but it makes me upset about Tenet because I really want to see that movie as well. And, you know, here we are.
Yeah, we said Tenet would be held till next year. I think that was our guess on Tenet. But, you know, the whole movie industry, the whole movie theater industry seem to have been riding on Tenet.
Yeah.
It was a major studio release from a popular director, you know, John David Washington, great actor. But you were like, man, what? I mean, are they really just going to open when Tenet says it's coming out? That's really the gauge, is Tenet?
Apparently so.
I just didn't, anyway, of all the movies, the big ones that were advertised, as being summer releases or spring or whatever, or fall. That was not the one I thought the entire industry would hinge on.
Yeah. But
apparently it was. Out here, they did the University 16 Theater opened the weekend before New Mutants. Mm. And then a couple, it opened a couple more of its theaters, Beechwood, and theater opened when New Mutants came out. And then for Tenet, they opened all of their local theaters, even the Commerce one.
Wow.
So the only people in Athens now that remain closed are the AMC and Cine. Cine doesn't need to. I mean, they've been rocking all these virtual screenings.
And right.
They're able to show more movies than they ever were. You know, they're taking care of the staff. Everybody's cool. You know, they're being cautious because, God, if something happens there, I mean, they're sunk. You know, they're an independent. They're a nonprofit.
Right.
They cannot be a super spreader event. No. But my question to you is, say theaters open up next weekend, what of the new releases would make you like risk it? And that doesn't mean like right now, but just the big ones for the end of the year. Because one of the things that the theaters have here is that you can rent for $120, you and 20 of your friends can have the theater to yourselves on a new release movie.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's not a terrible price for 20 people.
No, per person?
Yeah, I mean, that's less than a movie ticket, right?
Oh, much less.
So that's not terrible. But, I mean, do you have to bring 20 friends? Can you just pay the $120 and like four people show up?
Yeah. It's just up to 20 is the maximum.
Got it. That would be more... You know what? I don't even know if that'd be more interesting to me or not. Yesterday was the first day I ate inside a restaurant since March. So like, it's just like, I don't know. I don't know that there's anything coming out the rest of this year that would make me risk it.
No.
No. I don't know.
I looked at the seating charts just out of curiosity to see how they're doing it. And in the biggest theater in town, for New Mutants, which I do want to see, there were only 16 seats available in the whole theater. Because the first row, no one gets to sit there. The second row, no one on the ends, two on the inside, then they skip, then two more. Next row, completely X'd off, no one can sit there. So there's no one behind you, there's no one in front of you, and there's no one directly next to you.
Hmm.
But we are still breathing the same air for 2 hours. People are taking their masks off to eat and drink, and conceivably they're going to have it off the whole time. You know what I mean? Like as soon as they get in there, you have to have a mask to enter. You have to have a mask to be seated, but post that they could very well just take them off the entire time, you know, and probably do. But I really want to see Wonder Woman and Candy.
I was going to say maybe Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Wonder Woman and Candyman. I cannot wait. I am so excited for those. One, Candyman, just personally, I love. I've got an episode coming up about the original and that I'm going to do. But Wonder Woman, like my whole family loves that first Wonder Woman. Like we watch it a lot.
Yeah. The question is, will it still really come out? I mean, do you think that Tenet has set the precedence for those big movies that were supposed to come out, like Wonder Woman and Dune and stuff like that? And Black Widow, do you think they're still going to come out this year?
Yeah.
Or do you think that they'll get pushed because not everything is going to be open?
No, Tenet made $100 million, like worldwide. You know, it did about 40 here, I think. I mean, if they can make money, they're going to, because they can't just not. I mean, that's why I was saying everything was based on Tenet. Tenet did it. They were going to all do it. They were all going to follow, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, until a movie screening or a theater gets identified as a super spreader event, you know, like a funeral or a party, or you know how they keep saying some of these things are causing it, areas to spike until they've identified that. I don't see them. I think everything will proceed at this point the way it was going to proceed. Everything that was going to be streaming will be. I think some of those will probably go into theaters, like Bill and Ted went into some theaters. You know, we had it played here. So that's something that they may do. But yeah, everything that says, no, we're holding out for theatrical and is dated for, you know, September, October, November, December, I really think now they're all going to come out. I don't think they're going to make the kind of money they were going to make, but yeah, they're going to come out.
Interesting. Well, I don't know that anything here is opening up anytime soon. So I am not given a choice, which is fine. Yeah, it's kind of funny too, because this was the year I promised myself to watch more movies and bought a membership to Cinemark. And so now I have like 8 movie tickets just sitting on my account.
Well, I mean, they're going to be there to use, you know, and there was the article that the guy from, I think it was Variety, wrote, who drove 4 hours to go see Tenet. You know what I mean? It was like at the only theater that was open in California. So, you know, people are going to do what they're going to do. But I really think, like, by and large, without getting into a whole discussion at the end of this podcast, I really think people are just kind of like, they are continuing.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have people that are like me who are remaining home and we're only going out. I mean, I'm still, you know, doing quarantine, you know?
Yeah.
I just don't want to be part of the problem. Georgia's terrible. United States, terrible. I know we're making ourselves look really, really bad and backwards and whatever else. But do I think they're going to hold anymore? No,
they're just done. What will be interesting, though, is the Academy Award nominations, given that so many things didn't get released. Or got pushed so late in the year. It'll be interesting, because I wonder if it will be the year of more independent films as opposed to some of the larger, more popular things taking up some of the nominations.
I think they'll postpone the Oscars until more of these things have come out.
Really?
Yeah, they'll open the window wider. Instead of like December 31st, it'll be January or February. And then the Academy Awards will be held like in the spring. I think
we shall see.
I think that's what'll happen. But I love talking about this stuff with you, man.
Yeah. For sure.
I appreciate it, dude. And we'll do this again sometime. You got anything you're really hooked on as far as TV or games are concerned? I am, of course, obsessed with Lovecraft. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Lovecraft Country, I have been watching and has been brilliant. I still have The Boys season 2 that I haven't started yet, but I liked the first season. And then there's actually a bunch of other stuff that I watched that we didn't talk about, like Twilight Zone season 2, mm-hmm. Alone in the Dark series, which was the documentary about the Golden State Killer. Mm-hmm. And Patton Oswalt is like all over that thing. And so it's kind of really great to watch him go through that. The Go-Go's documentary was wonderful.
Love that. Yeah.
The Be Like Water, the Bruce Lee documentary was mm-hmm. really good. So yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of whatever strikes my fancy. I don't know that there's anything that I'm anticipating. A lot of it, I guess, is going to come out at the movie theater. And so,
yeah, I don't know how I feel, but I'm going to, we'll see what happens when we catch up next month.
Totally.
All right, Sam. We're going to peace out, everybody. Bye.
This video has ended recording.